The pain in the pump or the pain in the roadways this summer? Pain behind the wheel. We will talk all about transportation on today's edition of Regionally Speaking. So we talk with Patrick DeHaan from GasBuddy.com on the latest on gas prices here in the Midwest. We'll also be talking with NDOT to find out just what goes into the decision-making of the construction season as we are underway. And what is the future of automobiles and roadways? AI in potholes? Yes, AI in potholes. All of that coming up right after the news here on Regionally Speaking.
Live from NPR News.
All right, joining us on the line now from Gas Buddy is Patrick DeHaan. Patrick, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, doesn't sound like more good news coming down the pipeline this summer for us here in Northwest Indiana and the Chicagoland region when it comes to gas prices. We know inflation is up. We know that gas availability is down as a result of the ongoing war in Ukraine with Russia. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to gas prices and a reduction in the cost to fill up the gas tank?
Yeah, not a whole lot. Unfortunately, we continue to see some bad news, even more bad news, that is. Just released today, the Department of Energy showing another big decline in the amount of gasoline supply in the region. And that's having a profound impact on gas prices, which have just absolutely jumped across much of the area. And that's a trend that may continue as gasoline inventories in the Midwest are now at their lowest seasonal level on record.
Normally, we see an increase in prices when it comes to the summer blend versus the winter blend, and especially around the holidays, I guess, between Memorial Day and Labor Day is really when we see those summer prices increasing. Is that still a factor as well? I mean, we've also got the state taxes here in Indiana that have just gone through as well. And it feels like every time we turn around, there's another reason for the increase in prices. Are we still seeing that same summer blend?
Yeah, the transition has been made to summer blend, and that's not an active factor, but it is one of the factors that are keeping prices a little bit higher than, you know, areas downstate.
Patrick, I remember just even a couple of days ago, maybe it was a few weeks ago at this point, that President Joe Biden had said that they were going to get into the oil reserves to help reduce the overall demand for gas and trying to reduce those prices. Have we had any luck there, and what is the status of our oil reserves?
Well, I mean, the SPR, we've seen a release of oil from the nation's strategic reserve, but it hasn't had much of an effect because it pales in comparison to the amount of oil that Russia produces. So, you know, it's really not been noticed in the way that it's not actively pushing prices down. It is probably preventing prices from having jumped more meaningfully for the price of oil, but Russia churns out 10 times as much oil as we're releasing from the SPR, and that's why it's not going to have a significant impact on lowering prices, but it may prevent them from going up more significantly.
I know you're a gas guy and not necessarily an analyst when it comes to foreign or international relations, but is there any hope that there's a scaled back effort on this war, or that it comes to an end in any meaningful time to go ahead and help get that oil either back into the pipeline, no pun intended, or at least be able to have access to that anytime soon?
Well, you know, I don't think the war is going to end anytime soon. And as you mentioned, you know, a lot of this is about geopolitical predictions. Having said that, I think there's been so much damage done already by Russia and their invasion of Ukraine that, you know, a lot of Western countries, a lot of oil companies from Western countries have completely left Russia. And I think that, you know, even if there is an end to the war, those countries, those oil companies are not likely to go back there and do business with Russia anytime soon. So even if there is a resolution, between Russia and Ukraine. I don't see that providing much benefit because I don't think Western countries are going to jump right back into it. Maybe if there's a regime change, but you know that appears quite unlikely as well.
We're talking with Patrick DeHaan, who is the petroleum analyst for Gas Buddy. Patrick, we just talked about it briefly about Indiana, but across Illinois, Michigan, and of course here in Indiana, we're already seeing average prices above $5 a gallon. Is there a reason why the Midwest is seeing higher prices than some other places?
Mm-hmm. Well, there is. Over the last several weeks, and again today, data continues to point to gasoline inventories in the Midwest at their lowest seasonal level on record. And those records go back to 1990. So we're dealing with an extremely tight situation. Demand is still very strong, and supply has continued to drop. And that has pushed us to this situation where gasoline supplies are, like I said, at their lowest seasonal level on record. It's quite worrisome.
Whose job is it to stock up on gas when it comes to those regional locations?
I'm trying to follow what you may mean here, but a lot of the time, refineries have been producing or utilizing 94% of their capacity, and inventories of gasoline keep falling. So this is really just a supply-demand balance, that demand is outpacing supply, and that is chiseling away at inventories slowly week after week.
So it's just that more people here in the Midwest seem to be demanding more gas than in other parts of the country.
Well, it may be that. It may be a function of refineries that even in March and April were doing maintenance, right? So they may have missed out on a little bit of a window to produce as much gasoline because of maintenance. But I'm hopeful the numbers will eventually improve, but things are very tight in the interim.
Absolutely, and it looks like they're going to be tight for the remainder of the summer. Really quick, Patrick, before we let you go, what are you seeing in terms of those trends, the traditional summer vacation? Are folks pulling back on that? I know demand is still high across the Midwest, but are people driving less, or are they keeping those habits up despite the prices increasing on a regular basis?
Well, it looks like demand is still very strong. I mean, it also does look like there's a little bit of a hit to demand, and that may be due to the fact that prices are very high. But it's we're not seeing much drop in demand, even with prices at record highs, and that's, I think, been the most impressive thing to see.
Patrick DeHaan, senior petroleum analyst for Gas Buddy. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us here on Regionally Speaking, and I think you've convinced me to go ahead and make sure the air in my tires on my bike are inflated properly to go ahead and get around this summer.
We're getting back to those days. Yeah, make sure your vehicle's maintained. Thanks for having me.
All right, thank you. Welcome back to Regionally Speaking. I'm Tom Maloney, and joining us over the phone line is Cassie Bajak, the Public Relations Director for the Northwest Indiana District of NDOT. Cassie, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Thanks for having me.
I have to ask this, I think, for everybody that's listening right now. Why are you doing this to us?
Yeah, it always feels that way, especially, at the beginning of summer when so many things are starting at the same time.
That's kind of how it feels. They all start at the same time. Is there some sort of a magical switch with NDOT and they say, you know what, it's Memorial Day weekend, we've got to start road construction projects? Or is it just that's when the funding comes through? Is it because that's when the weather clears up? What's the reason all these road construction projects seem to start around that same time?
Yeah, so we start construction basically at the beginning of April. And what we really try to be mindful of is Memorial Day weekend and July 4th weekend. So if we can try to start some things early, like in April, and have them wrapped up by 4th of July, we try to do that as much as possible. But then again, if we can avoid starting something before Memorial Day and start it afterward instead, because of how long it's going to take to do that project, we'll try to do that as well. So some of the scheduling comes down to just trying to avoid some of those really high traffic holiday weekends. But obviously with summer travel, there's just, a lot of people out on the roadways, so we can't avoid it altogether, but we try our best.
So aside from maybe taking a detour or taking a workaround through a construction site, what are some of the best ways for drivers to alleviate that, you know, that gas burden, you know, if they're sitting in construction, it's like, oh man, I'm stuck on traffic again, or they're having to do those, you know, couple of mile detours around a big piece of construction work that's happening. Is there anything that drivers can do?
We do have our site, 511in.org, and we recommend that people check that out for any, you know, lane or road closures that are on state roads. They may be able to, you know, use that website to find a better route for them to take to work or on a trip or whatever the case may be. So that can be really useful just to have a more awareness of where all of the state road work zones are at.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, you know, during summer, it's kind of hard to avoid because we have such a short window of time to get all these projects done. So, you know, if you can leave, kind of keep in mind when traffic's going to be the highest, and if you can leave, you know, 5 minutes sooner or 5 minutes later when things might be a little bit less congested, just little stuff like that can really go a long way. So just kind of trying to keep that in mind of, you know, what problem areas are going to be on your commute and how can you try to time that a little bit better.
We're talking with Cassie Bajak. She is the Public Relations Director for the Northwest Indiana District of NDOT. And no, it is not her fault that you are currently stuck in traffic. Cassie, let's talk about the differences. You mentioned just a moment ago about state roads, highways as well. What are the roadways and the projects that NDOT oversees versus local or county municipalities?
Yes, basically NDOT does most of what we would consider like kind of like our numbered highways and interstates, so I-94, I-65, US 30, State Road, you know, 23, things like that. Those are going to be our jurisdiction. And then outside of that, you're going to have, you know, your county roads are going to be your county highway department. And then anything within city limits is the city. Unless it's a state road that's running through those areas, and then in which case it's ours. So it gets a little complicated because a lot of state roads also have, you know, different names locally. So people can kind of get a little confused, but basically those really main heavily trafficked routes are what we take care of.
Got it. And when you are in that heavily trafficked route area, you know, we all see the big, giant orange cones, and I should note that even if construction is not going on, and I apologize, I've been guilty of this, and I think we all have, even when construction is not happening and those orange cones are still up, you still have to abide by those posted speed limits within the construction zone. Is that right?
Correct, yeah. Sometimes it's because, you know, you never know if a worker is out there. So, I mean, we do have some construction zones where they do work, you know, 24/7, basically. You know, people can be out there at night as well, mainly on the interstate projects. So you just never know if someone's there, so you should always proceed with caution and assume that there might be workers that are, you know, present on site.
And what is NDOT doing, or what has NDOT done in order to go ahead and work on worker safety and protection, aside from traffic cones and concrete barriers? Is there anything else going on there to help reduce accidents and crashes within a construction zone?
Yeah, I mean, we do our best to try to get, you know, awareness out there about a project before it starts. We have news releases that people can sign up for to have them sent to their email or their phone so they're, you know, more aware of where work zones might be on their commute. We also just really take as much into consideration before a project as possible. So when it comes to deciding what the speed limit's going to be, what the maintenance of traffic is going to look like, and things like that. And we did add the concrete barriers for all interstate projects, and I think that's been, you know, a huge help with safety, especially on those roadways where people are traveling so fast and there are so many vehicles out on the road.
And I know that just recently NDOT began using a Q truck, basically a warning truck out ahead of road construction projects. Can you talk with me about that?
Yeah, so basically it helps people become more aware that there is going to be construction. We're working on, you know, technology that also helps send that information to, like, GPS. So if you're using Google Maps or Apple or whatever you might be using, having that information go to those programs to kind of warn people that there's going to be a slowdown ahead And we're seeing that it helps a lot with, you know, preventing basically rear-end crashes where people don't realize that traffic is slowed or stopped ahead, and they end up running into one of the vehicles that's already, you know, slowed or stopped because of the construction. So it's really helping prevent some of those crashes and keeping motorists safe.
We're talking with Cassie Bajak, the Public Relations Director for the Northwest Indiana District of NDOT here about summer road construction season. It is already underway, as she mentioned, getting started in April. When does it end? Is it just when the projects are done, when the weather gets cold? Is there a timeline, a time frame for when these summer projects are done?
So most will wrap up in October or November. We obviously have to stop for, you know, the winter season around here. So most of them will end in, you know, October or November. A few projects will, you know, extend into December. That's pretty rare. We try to have everything wrapped up before snow starts falling kind of consistently in the area. And then we basically just take that break between November or December to about April, where projects are not occurring, other than, you know, routine maintenance kind of stuff.
So construction season quite literally lasts forever is what you're telling me.
It feels like it. And then winter also feels like it lasts forever. So there's not necessarily a win there, but
well, yeah, I mean, I know that at the statewide level, 465 has been known as Pothole Central around Indianapolis. I'm sure that there are some less than family-friendly names that people have called that highway. But it's a result of the winters here and salting trucks going out and clearing roadways. Unfortunately, it does cause erosion on those heavily traveled and heavily used roadways. I know it's not really the time of the year for it. You know, we're in June right now, but you know, that salting process, how much of a factor is the salting of the roads in terms of creating potholes and creating issues on roadways that need patchwork or that need full repavement?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely is something we take into consideration. And I think something that, you know, motorists should be more aware of is, you know, when we use materials out on the roadway, especially salt or even more corrosive things, when we have, you know, ice or something like that falling and we need to use something a little bit more intense than salt, we're also keeping in mind that, you know, that is going to do damage to the roadways. So we want to be really careful about how much we're using. We want to use enough that it's effective, but we don't want to overdo it and cause more damage to the road than what's necessary. So there is actually kind of like a delicate science behind, you know, how much we use, what we're using, when we're using it. We have to take all of that into consideration during the winter months.
And either way, somebody's going to complain that the roads aren't plowed fast enough. And in the summer, they're going to complain that the roads are full of potholes.
Yeah, we do our best, but it can be somewhat of a no-win situation, for sure.
It certainly feels that way. And again, you know, if you see brake lights ahead of you, please slow down, as well as those Q trucks that we talked about and orange traffic safety cones, concrete barriers. Do your best to go ahead and get home safely, as well as making sure that those workers on the other sides of those barriers are getting home safely as well. Cassie Bajak, Public Relations Director for the Northwest Indiana District of NDOT, joining us here on Regionally Speaking. Cassie, thank you so much, and I promise I'm not going to blame you for all of the road construction across Northwest Indiana this summer.
Thank you, and I appreciate that.
And welcome back to Regionally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. A tool to help communities capitalize on Northwest Indiana's commuter rail project is moving forward. The Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority held the first of two public hearings Thursday on seven proposed transit development districts along the South Shore Line and Westlake Corridor. They're kind of similar to TIF districts, but in this case, they capture the incremental growth in income and property tax revenue near train stations, so that money can be used on improvements in that district. The idea is to promote transit-oriented development, like homes and businesses within walking distance to the train. Michigan City Director of Planning and Redevelopment, Skylar York, said the district's ensure the viability of rail transit, but they're also a tool for future growth. The situation is similar in Hammond, according to the chief of staff, Phil Tallien. He noted that the city
will
already
in our downtown and in our expanded downtown, I would say.
The situation is similar in Hammond, according to the chief of staff, Phil Tallien. He noted that the city already has agreements for three new developments, bringing around 300 residential units to downtown Hammond, and conversations with three more developers are currently underway. But some of the proposed transit development districts stretch far beyond the train stations they're designed to serve. East Chicago's extends north along Indianapolis Boulevard all the way to Columbus Drive, while a cross-section includes most of Chicago Avenue from White Oak to Parrish. The proposed transit district for the future Westlake Station at Main Street has an even stranger shape. It contains the underdeveloped land near the station site, but also has barely contiguous pockets on Calumet Avenue around 45th and south of 213th. Residents will have another chance to comment on July 14th. The RDA Board of Directors will then vote on the plan before it goes to the State Budget Committee for final approval. Each year, following the harsh winter season, complete with mounds of snow here in Northwest Indiana, we all deal with the same issue, potholes. Luna Liu is a civil engineering professor with Purdue University. Professor Liu directs the Center for Intelligent Infrastructure, and she is investigating unique ways to build artificial intelligence into concrete paved bridges and highways, enabling them to prevent and repair their own damage. Professor Liu joins us on Regionally Speaking to explain how the new technology she, along with a team of researchers, developed that could benefit future drivers. Professor Liu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Liu, potholes in Indiana, and particularly in Northwest Indiana, are an issue. With weather conditions like record-breaking snow, followed by tons of salt spread out on the road to help make navigating icy road conditions just a little easier, have caused major issues. And the cost to drivers for repairs due to the damage from potholes can be quite expensive. Add to that the ongoing cost to repair roads to NDOT. Please take a moment to tell us about the technology that you and your team have designed.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, thanks for having me. And as you mentioned, the poor road condition in the United States has cost a lot of money for the taxpayers. On average, it's about $600 per year per taxpayer. So in order to solve that problem, we have invented the technology by using the road sensors to understand the strength development of the material at any given moment. So the benefits can be manifested in a couple ways. One is to drastically reduce the cost of frequently repair, as you just mentioned, and also we can accelerate the construction schedule and typically let the traffic open earlier after major construction of the road or repairing. And another major benefit is on the environmental impact. So because of using this technology, we can optimize the design of the material. So therefore, we can cut excessive use of the material, such as cement, as we know, which is the largest contributor for the CO2. And on the same time, we can reduce the current practice, for instance, making the sampling and to test the strength of the material. And as you know, those cylinders and beams are typically going to the landfill afterwards. So we can see many benefits.
Take a moment to explain to us how this technology will work on a major highway.
So generally, it's starting with if you do a major construction for the new construction, we just embedded in the sensor on the road before we pour the concrete or all the other materials, and then the sensor will send a wave into the roads, and then by measure the opposition of the road to this wave, we understand the strength development, and then all those information will send through the cloud, right? And then the engineers will receive on their smart app, smartphone and all the other smart devices.
Wow. The ability for an engineer to access that information via an app right at their fingertips sounds quite promising. I'm sure that's what's got NDOT excited. Can you take a moment to tell us about the partnership between NDOT and Purdue University? And has NDOT began to implement this new technology?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great point. So that actually this project was developed between Purdue and Indiana DOT. So NDOT bought to Purdue with this specific, the challenge is to understand, the road condition at any given moment. So we started develop the technology, and in 2019, we started pilot implementation. Of course, there is a couple of, pivot reiteration of the technology, this is leads to current stage of we're doing this the large-scale implementation on several major interstates in the Indiana, but also we're working with Federal Highway Administration and seven other states in the United States, nationwide to implement the technology with seven other Department of Transportation.
Oh, wow. So this new technology will not only be implemented by NDOT, but it will be implemented by other states across the country? That's quite impressive.
Yeah, correct. Thank you. Yes, we do. Indeed, we work with, California, Texas, Colorado, Tennessee, Missouri, North Dakota, and Utah. There's many other states really among the country. And if you look at it geographically, it's also located and covered all the different parts of the United States.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking, and we're speaking with Luna Liu, a civil engineering professor with Purdue University. Professor Liu, you posit that there are three reasons why roads need a digital facelift. Can you share what those are?
Yeah, so the reasons we need this digital facelift is to really reduce the cost for the taxpayers, and then accelerate the construction schedule, and also reduce the negative environmental impact to make roads last longer.
And finally, Professor Liu, I can only imagine this new technology will be a game changer that will not only improve road conditions, but make all Hoosiers, including us here in Northwest Indiana, happy. So where do we go from here?
Fantastic. So currently there is a company, full-fledged commercial company, has been developing the technology, and we have manufactured the product, and we'll start the beta phase implementation this year, and then the commercial release the next year. And also we're working with Federal Highway and American Society of the Highway Transportation on developing the nationwide testing standard.
Professor Liu, thank you so much for spending time with us on Lakeshore Public Radio, sharing all of the details of this new artificial intelligence that will greatly improve road conditions.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Joining us on the line now is Executive Director of the U.S. Department of Energy's Drive Clean Indiana, and you might know him better as the host of Green Fleet Radio, Carl Lissa. Carl, welcome to Regionally Speaking.
Tom, wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Hey, so the news dropped just a couple of weeks ago that Kokomo was getting a big battery plant, hundreds of jobs coming to the central part of the state, and it got me thinking, Indiana builds a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of manufacturing in this state. We build a lot of green energy devices, whether they are windmills, whether they are batteries or electric vehicles. And I wanted to kind of get a lay of the land, so to speak, when it comes to green energy usage and availability here in the Crossroads State. And I figured who better than to talk to than the guy that knows it all, Carl Lissick. So, Carl, how does Indiana stand when it comes to green energy usage?
Well, I think that number is continuing to increase here, Tom. I think, again, just to remind our listeners is that the Clean Cities Program is a fuel neutral organization, so we support all of the new approved technologies. So that includes, biofuels. It includes, biodiesel, electric, hydrogen, So, you know, as we move forward into the energy stage, you know, Indiana is I think it's the second largest producer of parts for the automotive industry. So obviously being the crossroads of America, this is a very important announcement, you know, about the battery manufacturing coming to the state. So, you know, a lot of things that we work on as the Drive Clean Indiana program with the Department of Energy is on the deployment of these technologies. So literally it's helping to educate our fleets. And a fleet really is consumer education, it's business education, it's, you know, working with our legislators, working with our congressional leaders to discuss, you know, all of those attributes and what it means to our state. But we also are a big producer of ethanol here in the state. I think we are the sixth largest producer of ethanol. And again, for our listeners, 10% of all of our gas that is pumped, you know, at our local station, it contains a 10% blend. And you know, some of the things that we've heard, and I think this has come to fruition, is that those the blend potentially could go up to 15%, which will help in lowering the cost of conventional gas as we know it today. So, and then we do have many. We're a large producer of soybeans, which is used in the biodiesel. So agriculture plays a huge role in our economy here in the state. And, you know, a lot of that is exported to different parts of the country and different parts of the world. But like you had asked about the battery manufacturer, this is really a huge announcement for the state of Indiana and, you know, what it's going to mean for future deployment of electric deployment of, you know, different types of technologies and different types of electric cars and opportunities for us to, you know, reduce our dependence on imported oil. Again, we promote the use of domestic products here and bringing some of the business cases. We've got a plethora of information that's available to our listeners to learn about all of these technologies, you know, listed on our website, which is drivecleanindiana.org. So there's a list of all the different types of fuels. We have different announcements that are, you know, available as some of these new announcements are made in regards to, you know, different types of economic development that is coming to our state. And so, you know, part of our role is to help coordinate as our economic development folks are talking to some of these worldly companies in trying to lure them, but the advantages of coming to Indiana with, you know, the very progressive and opportunistic tax base that we have here in our state and the very well educated and diversified workforce. So it's very attractive. And I believe we will be hearing a lot more different types of manufacturing technologies coming to our state very soon.
That sounds promising. Carl, you mentioned the 10% of gas that's pumped contains ethanol, and ethanol blends could go up to about 15%. Is that the summer gas blend that we so often hear about this time of year?
It is not. Well, it is and it is not. What I will say is that you know, that was one of the waivers I believe that the president had just waived. And there's different labeling requirements that each of our I don't want to say our producers, but our gas stations as at the pumps that they have to label on there. And so I think that has been waived for this year. So, you know, again, I think the idea is that we want to see, you know, ways of the United States lowering the conventional cost of fuel as it is today. And so this would be one of those opportunities that we could have higher blends of ethanol in our gas. And so most cars can actually accept the blend up to 20%. And, you know, some of the data that we've seen across the United States shows that originally when, you know, the ethanol blends were like 85% ethanol, we saw in many of our communities here in Northwest Indiana that we had worked with grants, you know, they were the fuel economy or the BTU value of that of the gas, they were getting less fuel economy. And with the calibration of the new engines and, you know, we've seen that gap lessen, if you will. So, you know, again, I think we've got a couple projects that will that are soon be announced here that will potentially take diesel trucks and convert those to potentially run 99% ethanol on these trucks. So there's going to be some demonstrations that we'll be hearing about here in Northwest Indiana. So there's a new technology. So it's an adaptation or a kit that over-the-road trucks could actually utilize. There's certain types of engines that this will be allowed. But again, what we see is, you know, these types of additional technologies come into fruition. And all that, really, these demonstrations are going to be taking place here in Indiana.
So what makes Indiana such a driving force, no pun intended, when it comes to providing, I guess, car parts? You said that we're the second largest provider of car parts for the nation, that Indiana is, again, a driving force behind this. What makes Indiana so unique in that regard?
Again, I think it's our workforce, being the crossroads of America, the transportation sector. Indiana is the leader in production of steel. And I think that, that's another attribute. So, looking at combining all those different factors, the tax base, the workforce, we've got a great workforce development program here that is, retooling and retraining workers. And so I think, the opportunity where we're literally working collaboratively, with economic development and technology, working with our universities and, offering these different types of skill sets for potential manufacturers to come to the state, tax incentives. So it's a combination of all of the above. But I do think that, we will be hearing a lot more with, some of the newer technologies. Hydrogen is a term that, since we've been involved with clean fuels for over 15 years, we've always said the hydrogen is about 10 years away. So there's a working group here collectively in our state that is working on trying to bring hydrogen to various parts of Indiana, and that would allow us really to be one of the leaders in the nation. So we'll be talking more about that as this comes to fruition in the next couple of months.
We're talking with Carl Lissick, the Executive Director of the U.S. Department of Energy's Drive Clean Indiana, as well as host of Green Fleet Radio, heard every Wednesday. But this is not Green Fleet Radio. This is Regionally Speaking. Carl, I can't help but think of Doc Brown in Back to the Future. At first when he's, driving the DeLorean around the time machine, right? He stole parts from a terrorist group in the Middle East who wanted him to make the bomb, and he used that instead for his, for the transportation and the time travel for the DeLorean. And then by the end of, I think, the first or second movie, he was using a trash converter to fuel. So when you say hydrogen, I'm thinking, Marty McFly when he says, "You're telling me this sucker is nuclear?" So I hear that, but that's not the case, right? We're not talking about nuclear vehicles driving around like a submarine in an ocean, right?
No. I think, we're blessed here in Northwest Indiana with the steelmaking process, and there is hydrogen is used in the development of steel. And so, the idea literally is hydrogen is probably the cleanest of all the fuels. And so, like energy storage, working on collaborative ways of bringing some of these technologies, to the steelmaking process, with the various vehicles that are at the steel mills and the various industries that are revolving around that, and the ports, which is a huge economic engine, and then our communities. I think there's definitely some opportunities for our communities in the National Park Service, here. To look at some hydrogen-based, but the technology for mass-producing vehicles is very expensive, and so there is, I believe, there's maybe one major original equipment manufacturer, Toyota, that has a sedan that runs on hydrogen, and we are working on potentially doing a demonstration with that here in the summer. So we are trying to actually get that vehicle We could actually do a demonstration here in Northwest Indiana for people to see this vehicle, potentially to drive the vehicle and look at ways of potential implementation. But a lot of work still to be done on this endeavor. But again, we've got some of the smartest people in the nation right here in Northwest Indiana, and I think working collaboratively together is going to be one of the keys to see some of the deployment of all these technologies coming not only to the state but here to Northwest Indiana.
All right, so I got to ask, when will we get the trash to gas converter put on our cars? Or I guess rather, what can people do now to help lower their individual needs for gas and save money at the pump as gas prices are really going through the roof this summer?
You know, one of the things that we've always promoted for emission reductions is, I think probably on your way to work this morning, Tom, as you go past any drive-through, you go past any school, what do you see cars doing or vehicles doing? You see them idling. And, our motto has always been idling gets you nowhere and zero miles per gallon. So one of the first things that anybody can do is don't go through the drive up. Get out of your vehicle. Go into your establishment. That's a great way. With gas prices being so high, we've got some estimates that we've been working with our communities and several businesses here in Northwest Indiana, and we've seen that there's a lot of myths with idling in the summer and in the winter, We're seeing idling at sometimes at the rates of 40%, and so if you look at that over a fleet of vehicles, that it's very expensive. So that's one of the people can utilize that as an example. And we will be having some other fun facts moving forward here very shortly. So there'll be a program that we're in the development of education for idle reduction and, really working a lot with our schools as the school season comes to fruition here very, very soon, I believe in August. So that is something we'd like to see with parents and, our communities looking really at ways of reducing idling. Public transportation, again, I think that's something that we all need to look at is, the availability of public transportation, car share, that was very big actually when we started, and we kind of got away from that. But car sharing, I think, will be another phenomenon that we'll hear more about. And, some of the other mobility, we work, the Green Fleet really is we work with NERPC, the Northwestern Indiana Regional Planning Commission. And, again, with all of the planning that they have with their comprehensive plans is, working with all of our government leaders. But I would definitely, look at opportunities for all people that are listening to this to be part of the solution. So I think, talking, working with the nonprofit agencies like Drive Clean Indiana is a good way to get involved and look at ways and, look at some of the tips that we do have on our website. And, like I said, I just think there's ways for us as Hoosiers and as Americans that we don't even realize sometimes and idling is one of those opportunities that I think if we all just got out of our vehicles at our destinations and didn't idle our vehicles as much. You've seen with a lot of the new technology, with a lot of the new vehicles that have come out, they've got those automatic idle reduction. So like when you come to a stoplight and the car automatically turns off. So that's been a big phenomena. And I have not seen the studies on that, what that has saved in regards to gasoline. But again, you don't need to have a brand new vehicle to shut off your engine when you can. So
that's heavy, and I didn't expect so many Back to the Future references, but here we are. Carl, speaking of heavy, electric vehicles pose a really unique challenge to car owners, whether it's the weight of the vehicle causing issues with tires as well as the impact it has on the roads. But what should somebody look into if they're listening to this conversation right now, if they're thinking about maybe getting an electric vehicle this summer to go ahead and help reduce the impact at the pump this summer?
Absolutely. So right now, there's about 70 different models that are electric related. So there's plug-in hybrids. So that means there's a plug that you can plug in, and that gives you, so you could plug this into a conventional 110 outlet in your garage, and it will give you probably 20 to 30 miles range, pure electric. So you've seen, and there's tax advantages of that. So there's various tax advantages that are available to consumers for these vehicles. And all this information, Tom, literally is on our website, you know, at Drive Clean Indiana. So if people, consumers, anyone listening, you know, they're interested, we have these 70 models. We've got the ranges, the dealerships where they potentially can be purchased. And this is something that we are working on with the state, with our utilities, and there'll be a branded name, branded program that will be coming out here shortly that will talk about, we'll be doing different consumer types of programs and, you know, getting people behind the wheels of these vehicles. So again, I think, you know, we have all these resources that are available for consumers to take a look at, but I think what we've seen is the availability of a lot of these vehicles locally in our dealerships. You know, there's more and more brands that are becoming available, as I said. But I think the proof that's in the pudding is, you know, there's a huge used vehicle market. And so, again, not to say that you have to go out and buy a new electric vehicle. So we've seen, you know, the electric vehicles, the ranges of these electric vehicles improving on an annual basis. And so the average, I think, in 2021 was about 240 miles on an electric vehicle range. So that's the average of all electric vehicles combined. And they say the actual range of a vehicle. So we've seen vehicles 100 miles to 400 miles. And again, as some of this new technology is brought to fruition with the battery, you know, majority of all the batteries in these vehicles are made out of lithium. And so there's all kinds of new research that is being done as we speak on new types of battery and deployment of these new technologies. You know, the use of potentially coal ash for battery storage. So there's all kinds of things. So, and then the reuse of a lot of this lithium. So, you know, one of the questions we always get almost on a daily basis, yeah, it's great that people are driving electric vehicles, but, you know, how is that, how are those, you know, how do they power those electric vehicles with coal-based electric charging stations? And coal-based electric plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, I think here locally, our utility provider has a very green initiative with wind and solar. And, you know, those percentages of how electricity is generated is, it's coming up with renewables and other technologies besides just coal. But so, you know, again, I think folks, you know, look at our website, look at some of the information that's available, and we are a resource. We're not selling anything. I mean, we have facts and figures, but, you know, do your homework. That would be the one thing, and we do have those tools, and these are all US EPA. You know, we're not selling a certain vehicle. We're not selling a certain technology, but we have this information, this data, and, you know, love to share this with anybody that's interested.
Carl Lissick, the Executive Director for the U.S. Department of Energy's Drive Clean Indiana, as well as the host of Green Fleet Radio. I guess you guys aren't ready for that yet, but your kids are going to love it. Looking forward to the future of green energy here in the state of Indiana, of course, the crossroads of America. Carl, a lot of great tips here today to go ahead and help maybe ease the pain of the pump for some folks across Northwest Indiana. And of course, we'll be listening to you next Wednesday as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, thank you again for the opportunity to be on.